Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with my second in commands. That's two of them. Producer Dave and Commander Chris. And we're coming to you from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, Oregon. And all of our affiliates on Barbecue Nation and the Envision Radio Networks. We are all concerned about the quality and freshness of our food. That's become more of a talking point in the last 20 years or so. And a few weeks back, I visited my old stomping grounds of Ilwaukee, Washington, and ran into something that I thought was kind of interesting. I found a company there that just might have the answer for fresh fish. Mike Domeyer is one of the partners in Trey Finn, and Mike will be joining me in just a few moments, and we'll hear his story. This week's music is from Clint Black, and this portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef that is guaranteed quality, and I say that honestly, quality each and every time. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. All right, let's say hi to Mike and welcome you to the show, buddy. How did you and your partners decide to do Trey Finn?
We jumped in both feet, so here we are 6 years later.
Had you spent a lot of time fishing before that?
Yeah, it's a natural progression as I see it. We spent a lot of time on the rivers, salmon fishing, and kind of extending to the ocean fishing, and we'd have a big family reunion every year out there in a walk of a keep disappointment, and started just stretching out a little bit further as technologies increased and safety margins increased. We felt comfortable stretching out a little bit more and tackling the elusive albacore. So I remember the first albacore we caught, it was a game changer. You know, when you compare an albacore on a pulling line versus a salmon. So we absolutely fell in love with it and never looked back.
How many of the people actually worked the boat on Trey Finn?
We average four people, a four crew trip, one captain, and it takes those hands on there to, you know, we individually handle each fish, and it's labor intensive. And our boat, the way we produce fish is having to individually bleed them into a slurry to kind of flash cool the fish, get all the blood out of them, and then get them packed on ice. Uh-huh. And in order to do that, you got one guy running the boat, usually have two fishermen, and then a guy working the deck. And so if we can get a fifth guy in there, you know, that kind of eases some of that workload. We've been out with three, and at times that's somewhat handicapped. So, yeah, an average of four guys, for sure.
I was a deckhand out of Ilwaukee when I was about 12, 13, 14 years old on my uncle's commercial charter boat. So I know what it's like, all hands on deck, and I also know what it's like when you don't have enough hands. That's the tough part. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the catching the fish is the fun part. It's moving the 2 ton of ice back and forth. It's just flat out hard work. So, you know, you jump into some rough 8-10 foot ocean conditions, and it could be a long day. It's just absolutely a long day, but we love what we're doing, and we wouldn't have it any other way.
We're talking with Mike Domeyer from Trey Finn, and Trey Finn's got an interesting, business model, and the fact that, quite frankly, if you don't know much about the fish business, a lot of the fish you go when you get to your local grocery store or one of the chain stores. Most of that fish has been previously frozen. There's some fresh, but most of it has been previously frozen, especially the shellfish and stuff. But Mike's crew doesn't do that. I'm going to let him tell you about how they work the process and then you get the fish to the door.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest difference that we recognized affecting the quality of the seafood that we were putting together was how quick did it get back to the dock? How was it handled once it got to the dock and into the processor's hands? The traditional model handed that seafood off to another entity, and the quality control would vary. So our fish, we distinguish as being caught and brought back to port within 24 hours without ever being frozen, and then immediately brought into our own in-house processing where it's hand-cut. Once we hand-cut that, it either goes down the road or it's put into a backpack bag and flash froze. So just by the fact that it's not ever being frozen and slacked out and then refroze, I think makes all the world of difference and just the ability to control the temp of an albacore and that meat allows us to keep a higher oil content and a better consistency once we do flash freeze it. So we're offering a couple other fish and handling in the same way. But yeah, the biggest difference is it's in-house, and we, coming into it, wanted to participate in the way the rest of the seafood and fishermen were participating, which was sell that fish at the dock and go back to fishing. And we moved some fish that way, but we wanted that quality to maintain or be maintained. So we had to rely on somebody else to drive it down the road and get it to the plate in the metro areas. That chain kind of broke down, and so it that led to us taking a step back, saying, all right, we're going to have to do this all in-house. We're going to have to drive the boat. We're going to have to catch the fish, drive the boat, get back. We're going to have to process a packet, get in the truck, and drive it down the road. And that was the only way we could prove that our seafood was of a different quality, which I think has been verified.
How many days a year do you guys fish?
Well, it's ever increasing. we anticipate about 45 days on the water for the albacore fisheries. It's usually twice as long as that. I think most of us plan for about 100 days, maybe 120 days on a good year. But on average, Mother Nature lets us get out there with boats our size after we have to cross the Columbia Bar about half of that time. So, yeah, in the last 3 or 4 years, I think we've averaged somewhere in the mid-40s on albacore, but we've just recently started fishing in an open-access fishery for black cod, which is 12 months out of the year. So we anticipate probably putting 2 more days every month than we did last year.
You guys aren't careful. They're going to make a deadliest catch show out of you guys, Mike.
Well, wait a minute. have you seen Battlefish?
No, I haven't. Honestly, I haven't.
They actually did make a show. Netflix jumped on board 2 years ago and filmed Battlefish, which the 8 episodes were premiered on Netflix, and it kind of chronicled our fishing on the albacore side with 5 other boats in the Pacific Northwest. And so that was our 15 minutes of fame.
There you go. Well, that works. I mean, you know, it's, yeah. I've been on a few of those national shows, and, you know, you take it while you can get it, I guess. So
it was a good experience. We really enjoyed being involved with it.
Oh, sure. We're talking with Mike Domeyer from Trayfin. We are going to take a break, but Mike and I will be back on the barbecue airwaves very shortly, so stay with us.
Never liked the rain till I walked through it with you. Every thundercloud that came was one more I might not get through. But on the darkest day there's always light, and now I see it too. But I never liked the rain till I walked through it with you.
Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and I'm with Mike Domeyer from Trayfin. We're going to talk to Mike in just a second here. If you would like to email us, it's BarbecueNation. That's BBQNation at SalemPDX.com. SalemPDX.com. That doesn't mean we're in Salem. That's the name of the company. And Twitter, you can look up CowCook57 if you want to. That's my Twitter handle. And then we also have Twitter for Barbecue Nation and Grilling at the Green. So we've got all kinds of stuff. And we'd like to thank our affiliates in the Envision Radio Network back on the East Coast and the Midwest. Thanks for being with us. Anyway, we are talking with Mike Domeyer from Trayfin. When you're pulling this stuff out of the ocean and the seas get a little choppy, I've been there, and that, do you ever pull up to the dock and go, whew, wonder if that was really worth it?
I think that is spoke often. Like, is this fish worth what we're doing right now? And that's usually a good question to gauge whether or not you should be on the ocean.
Yeah.
But yeah, to answer, the short answer is yeah, it certainly does happen. And I think that if it hasn't happened to you yet when you're crossing the Columbia Bar and participating in this fishery, it will happen eventually.
Oh, yeah.
That often. Like, don't get too cocky. She has a way of humbling you.
Oh, she'll come back and slap you right upside the head. Just bam.
Flat out.
Just flat do it. Do you guys think you'll add other boats and other crews?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually purchased from about five other boats in our co-op that are producing a day boat as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our boat, The Opportunity, was kind of a test bed to see if this new model of commercial fishing was going to be viable. And because we've been able to prove that we're starting to see more participation in it. So our vision would be to continue to add to our fleet and bring that up to three or four boats, and then have other commercial fishermen being able to figure out how to get fish to the market in a different way and put a little bit more money in their pockets.
You know, that's the same model that the beef company that I work with, Painted Hills, that's the way they started. Because there was all these cattle ranchers sitting around not making much money. And so they kind of banded together and they, you know, made some quality standards as far as, you know, choice and above to sell and this and that. And it's worked out really well for them. So I think you've got something there with your model.
Well, we sure hope so. And we recognize other producers doing the same thing and feel like we're kind of at a cusp of things shifting a little bit and folks wanting to be a little bit more knowledgeable of where their food comes from. And, you know, we have a great passion for being able to make that connection and just say, hey, this fish is available locally, and we can tell you whose boat it came off of and whose hand it's been in before it's set on your plate. So I know that a lot of, like to say cattle producers and a lot of other producers being able to tell that story are gaining popularity.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I hope it continues.
Yeah, what? I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm hoping that it continues, and I'm hoping that there are there's space for folks being more knowledgeable of their food and having more confidence in smaller producers that are bringing it to market that way.
Do people call you and ask you for advice on cooking the fresh fish when you get it?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny because that was one of our biggest hurdles with albacore fishing. So it was the first question we got because, you know, primarily a lot of that fish ends up in a can.
Right.
I mean, we just see thinking that this this what's gold to us ends up in a can. Like, wait a minute, we're such a beautiful fish, such an incredible quality. It's almost a travesty to put it in a can. But what bringing and bringing folks closer to recognizing the high quality was just needing to know how to prepare it. And so that first question is like, okay, how do you cook it? And so we have a couple base recipes that we always mention. But really, we do farmers markets, and I bet we get asked that question 50 times a day.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you're good about sharing samples. I know that because while the young lady that was running the little tent there right across from where you guys were in El Waco, while she was writing down your information, I probably ate eight of those little cups of
very, very good work. All right. Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it's there for.
Well, I'm not shy when it comes to that stuff, man. You know, I'm a food guy, so I can do that, you know, get away with it, I guess. But it was really, really good. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now, Mike?
I think that we see a small fleet of purposefully built day boats. Fishing boats out of El Waco. I see processing that handles the majority of our direct market there in El Waco, and being in a place that can offer a channel for other fishermen to do it. So, you know, I see us being able to do the lifting when guys just want to go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to support this model. So that's where that processing element comes in. So I hope in 5 years we can let folks know that, hey, if you want to just go fishing, and if you want to be able to get that fish to a farmer's market and sell it under your label, we'll help you do that. And we'll help facilitate those logistics to get you on the water and back off. So,
do you ever take any civilians with you fishing?
Yeah, there's some modalities to be conscientious of when it comes to that. They need to be trained on safety devices and licensed appropriately to be able to commercial fish.
Right.
But we also take that boat. It's always, like I said, we're passionate about all kinds of different fishing. So we recreationally fish salmon and rockfish and crab and, you know, whatever we can do out there at the Columbia, we enjoy doing, even if it's not on the commercial side. So we're still passionate about the sports side, and we have the Waco Tuna Club out there that we're members of that participate a lot of those fisheries on the sports side.
There you go. Mike, how can people find you?
TrinFinFoods.com is our website. Then you mentioned our facilities there on the waterfront in El Waco. We always encourage folks, if they want to stop by and just see where the fish comes from. And we have the Saturday market set up, usually offering our community-supported fishery customers their fish for pickup there at El Waco. Or four times a year, we're at 7th and Salmon at Wilder Land and Sea, conducting our pickup events for
sure.
Community-supported fishery.
Sure. Very cool, my friend. Good luck with all your fishing. And I'll be down in El Waco in about 3 weeks, and I'll be knocking on your door. Trust me.
Hey, I greatly look forward to it. Hopefully those albacore are in abundance in 3 weeks.
There you go. I hope so, too. We've been talking to Mike Dolmeyer from Trey Finn, and we're going to be back with Michelle Kaufman in just a minute right here on The Nation. It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033, 503-982-2033, at BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and we want to thank again Mike Dolmeyer from Trey Finn. Giving us a good story there on fresh fish and how to get them here in the Northwest. You can look up that TreyFinn.com and you can figure that out there. My next guest today, somebody I worked on television with not too long ago, Michelle Kaufman from Stoller Wineries. Michelle is a communications director and all the other titles that go with this, with her position out there. But She knows her wine, so that's why I'm talking to her. Besides that, she's a lot of fun to talk to. This segment is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef like your grandpa made, and there is no other beef like it. That's PaintedHillsNaturalBeef.com. And you can check out our shows on SoundCloud at BarbecueNation/JT. So there you go. Now I've done all that stuff. Welcome, Michelle.
Welcome. Thank you.
So barbecue, for years, and there's nothing wrong with it, has been like a beer thing. You know what I mean? It's like people have this vision of tailgaters or backyard barbecues, and they're cracking open some cold ones, which is fine. It's great. But not everybody drinks beer. So I'm thinking people drink wine too.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think the reason that most people think of beer as their go-to barbecue drink is because barbecue is such a high-intensity flavor profile.
Yes.
And when you're going after barbecue, you really want a wine that's going to match that intensity. You can either do that with the alcohol, like how hot is the wine, or how much fruit is it bringing to the table, or how much oak is it bringing.
And how do you discern that? I mean, I got to confess, I'm not a wine connoisseur. I like good wines. I've got a sister-in-law that works for a huge winery in California, and I know you, and I know a few other ones around. And I
think the best is, if you're not regularly tasting, I think the best thing to do is become really good friends with your wine steward at your grocery store or your favorite wine shop and really start to understand what it is that you're looking for in your wine. For me, I prefer wines that are fruity. And that doesn't mean sweet, but it definitely, you know, there's going to be some cherry or other fruit characteristics in the wine. If you look at Oregon, like Oregon Pinot, for example, you're going to want a warmer vintage to get those characteristics in the wine. So like 2015, 2016, which are both widely available across the nation, are really your go-to key vintages when you're looking for barbecue.
And when you're talking about barbecue now, are you talking about your standard stuff, ribs and beef? But what if you barbecued fish? What would you
do? It totally depends on what you're going to do. So you could do, you know, if you have a ribeye, for example, think of that fat that's in it. You're going to want a thicker skin grape because the tannins that are in that skin is going to help cut through that fat and cleanse your palate a little bit more. So like with a ribeye, you're going to want, say, like a Tempranillo or a Syrah, both of which we grow here at Stoller. But if you have a filet, you know, filet is one of the leanest proteins out there. So you're going to want something more like a Pinot, as long as you don't go crazy on your sauces. And then with fish, I mean, Pinot and salmon, barbecued salmon, one of my favorite things this time of year.
Well, you can do a lot with barbecue salmon. I mean, you can season it very lightly. You can season it with a flavor direction, whether it's like garlic and basil, or it's more off to the fruit side, or it's traditional barbecue, a little sweeter, like that. So you've got different, well, with any fish you can do that, but mostly salmon and some of the white fish like halibut, you can do that in easily. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm just curious because, like I said, for somebody who, I enjoy a good glass of wine, I really do. And I mean, I got the gist down between, you know, Merlot and Pinot and Riesling and all that stuff. But as far as to judge what would go with whatever I'm presenting, and you've seen me cook, so.
I always think that the easiest place to start is like goes with like, right? So if you have something that's like a salmon, which is a little bit more delicate, you're going to want to look for a more delicate type of wine. If you have something, again, that's thicker, like ribs or ribeye, you could go a little bit beefier because those are bigger, bolder meats that can stand up to that bigger, bolder wine.
So what are the lightest wines?
Definitely Pinot in the red category. So Pinot Noir, Gamay Noir, which is a new fun hip varietal, tends to be a little bit spicy, but definitely light and zippy. If you want to impress all your wine friends, find a good Gamay Noir. And for me, when I'm thinking barbecue, those are really the two that I'm going for, unless we're doing something a little bit bitter.
What about some just good old-fashioned heavy-duty Mad Dog 2020? I mean, what do you do with that?
You know, that is not my cup of tea, but drink what you like. So if that's you, you do you.
Last time me and Mad Dog met, my head couldn't stop hurting even if it was on the pillow for 5 days. So that's been a long...
I think my head hurts just thinking about it.
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago, and it can... It can stay back there in memory lane as far as I'm concerned.
I love it.
But if, you know, if you are going, I mean, you know, for example, now in my world, people are starting to cook more of their holiday foods, like turkey, like your prime rib roast or your pork roast or your strip loins or whatever. They're cooking those more outside for a number of reasons. One, we've got very good equipment now that you can use, good smokers and grills and stuff. That make it practical to do that, but also it saves a lot of room and time in the kitchen, taking your major, you know, heavyweight protein outside to cook it.
Absolutely. Thanksgiving is a prime example where the kitchen is at maximum overdrive. So if you can do anything to lift off that and take it outside, it can be really beneficial. On my Thanksgiving table, I love a good rosé of Pinot Noir. It has wonderful fruit complexity like a red wine will have, but it's got that bright acidity to cut through everything that's on your table, from, you know, Grandma Carol's sweet potatoes to Aunt Heidi's green bean casserole.
Yeah, but you got to watch Aunt Mildred's, you know, matzo balls or something. But sometimes those are tough.
Of course, of course. There's always that danger item that someone will bring that no one will touch.
Yeah, what are those little cabbage things that I hate so much?
But rosé is a great, it's a perfect wine to go after that because of that intensity of fruit and the acidity, which is really cleaning your palate.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, just for the fact that, you know, Aunt Ruth's deviled eggs, there wasn't ever much that could really cleanse the palate after you ate one of those buggers except time and, you know, maybe a blowtorch on your tongue or something, but it just, they were harsh. So once,
a nice Chardonnay could work too, especially if it's got a little bit, not a lot of oak. You don't want those, you know, giant butter bombs from the 80s, but a little bit of that toast of oak is really nice with the mayonnaise in your deviled egg.
Well, that's true. We're talking with Michelle Kaufman from Stoller Wineries. Michelle and I, here's a little backstory info for you. Michelle and I met while doing an episode of AM Northwest about, I don't know, a month and a half ago or something. And we hit it off. We had a good time together. And I mean, what's not to like? Great food and great wine. I mean, what the hell? You know, you got you're going to do it.
Those are the best parts of life. If we aren't enjoying great food and great wine and hell, even craft beer, like we're really missing out on what life has to offer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all good. So that's why I invited her on the show, and she's going to become a little regular with us here for a little wine tasting here and there and recommendations. And so we thank her very much for that. What's your favorite wine though? I got to ask.
Oh, right now with the summer, the way that it is, I want something with nice acidity. So I'm personally loving our Dundee Hill Chardonnay, which is a naked or un-oaked Chardonnay. So it sees no oak profile whatsoever. Really beautiful as we enter the dog days of summer.
So what do you have, little baby Chardonnays running around naked or what? I mean, what's...
Pretty much. So Chardonnay is one of the most transparent grape varieties out there. So if you put a lot of oak in it, it's going to show you that oak back in the finished wine. But if you just put it in stainless steel, it really, the only thing that you're tasting through on that wine is what Chardonnay can be, very pure. And that's what we mean when we say naked.
There you go. We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation and all of our stations down the line. We'll be back more with Michelle Kaufman right after this.
No sun on the Rockies, not even the light of day. I feel that old cabin fever.
Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Hey, welcome up. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. Right now we're talking with Michelle Kaufman from the Stoller Winery. Is it Stoller Family or just Stoller?
Yeah, Stoller Family Estate is our name. This this property that I'm actually looking at right now has been in our owner Bill's family since 1943. It used to be a turkey farm, and in our heyday, we had upwards of 700,000 turkeys roaming what is now beautiful rolling hills of vineyard.
Wow, that's a lot of turkeys.
Delicious turkeys.
I worked in a chicken ranch for about a week when I was a kid pulling soft eggs, and I can't imagine that many turkeys anyway.
Bill has some wonderful, wonderful stories about growing up and running out and keeping the chickens warm when the power went out. And
oh, yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty nuts. How often do wines change, Michelle? I mean, that's a question I've always wanted to ask somebody. You know, because you've got for whatever. 2014 is a great year for this. Maybe it's a Pinot, maybe it's a Shiraz, whatever it is. And then 15 is not so good. And 16 is not so good. But 17, it comes back and it's just great. I mean, obviously, if you know anything about nature, the fruit isn't always the same. But can't that be manipulated?
It can, but we don't want that. We want the purest expression of that fruit. And Oregon is a prime state. The Willamette Valley specifically is a prime example of vintage variation. And that's what you're talking about when you're like, 14 was a great vintage, 15 maybe not so much, 17 amazing. That's the vintage variation. And that has to do with, you know, what were temperatures like when the buds broke out of the vine and then when the fruit set and when harvest actually came around. And then you can have sleeper vintages. I think 2011 is one of the perfect examples of a sleeper vintage. When those wines were released, it was the coldest vintage on record, and those wines really didn't come into their own and start to show their true capability until about 2 or 3 years ago. And now they're stunning, truthfully beautiful.
Well, I when my sister-in-law is up, she works with folks that own Kendall Jackson. And so she's always talking about the nuttiness and the fruitiness and the this and the smokiness and the wafting, and I just say, well, it's a good glass of wine, you know. If you talk to me about single malt scotch, now I can go into detail, okay?
But you know, there's really three components you're looking for in any great wine, and that's sugar, acid, and tannin. And when you're talking about ageability and how well is that wine going to age, you're really looking at that tannin and that acid level to see if they're going to be able to carry out as they age in bottle. And they definitely do. The wine will continue to age as air gets in there and become something totally different. I know our winemaker team thinks of themselves as futurists and being able to project what is this bottle going to taste like in a year when we release and then 5 years when you pull it out of your cellar.
What's the average turnaround time for you get a crop of Pinot grapes and you're doing that and you're going to just make a Pinot out of them and you're going to do this and that. What's the turnaround time? A year, 6 months, 6 days?
It really depends on the wine we're crafting. So here at Stoller, we have three different tiers of Pinot Noir. We've got our Dundee Hills, which is our biggest, most encompassing blend. We sort of think of it as our mosaic, because it's all of the different clones of Pinot that we grow and all of the elevations that it's planted at, and then all of the vine age. So some as old as 25, some as young as 3. So that wine, you know, we pick it in the fall, and then it gets released the following fall. It spends about 10 months in barrel, a couple months in bottle, and then we release it. With our reserve, we definitely put more oak in them because we know that they're going to be in barrel longer. They're usually in barrel for 12 to 14 months and then in bottle a little bit longer after that. So our 2017 Pinot Noir is just releasing in a couple of months. And then with our legacy wines, which are some of our smallest and most myopic blends, very in a single clone, single section of our estate, we'll keep those well over vintage. We've only just recently released the 2015s.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It's super cool, but it's super nerdy. Like, I think that that's the thing. People get so scared about wine because it can be so pretentious. Like, if you don't know anything, like, how do I know if I like this wine? At the end of the day, drink what you like. If you like it, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, my daughter's got a rule with her wine. No more than $10 a bottle. So.
And there are some great wines out there, especially from Europe, where estates have been passed down from family to family through generations.
Yeah.
So you can get a killer bottle for $10
an ounce. There you go. Michelle Kaufman, thanks for being with us on the regular Barbecue Nation show today, and we will have her back as a contributor to the show. Michelle's from Stoller. Don't forget, we've got Mark Bittman coming up in the next hour, and so we're going to be talking to him about some cookbooks and some fun things. And Michelle is going to stay with us to the after hour show. So for all of you still listening, we'll be back in a few minutes. And for those of you not, go to the after hour show there on the SoundCloud page. We'll be back.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019.